ministry, and so yeah. I'll be interested to see the kind of the correlation or the differences and how it works. So, yeah.
I mean, I think the key is that it's probably a more confined process, but that process can be repeated, I think. And so the initial lie busting thing is very much about, you know, God, what do you want to do? So it's about asking God what he wants to do, and then it's in there, then just following his lead into identifying what it is, whether it's personal, generational, you know, whether there are areas of people's lives that are stuck, whether they're still demonic areas that are attached in some way, and looking to work through the process. It was good. I mean, last night we had a couple here who did the lie bust, and Jonathan observed and then critiqued and gave some things after, which was quite interesting. Those couple of guys were put on the spot, and there was two guys who did it as well, which was great. Because often it's a lot of ladies are involved in this stuff, but you know, we've got quite a few guys who are quite interested in it, which was good. So yeah, no, the whole. I feel it's very much in line with where God is wanting to take people, because it's about people hearing God for themselves, and it's about connecting up with the realm of heaven and his glory as part of that. So opening people up to engage him at a deeper level. So, you know, it certainly is very much in line and in tune with everywhere I feel God's going. And if it is can be an accelerated process, then I'm all for that. You know, years ago, someone used to go away for weeks of ministry and things, and you know, if we can do it, and we've actually engaged that with a couple of people who aren't Christians, which has been really interesting.
Wow.
You know, and one of them got saved. Well, both of them actually got saved as a result of that. I think Jonathan also recently has done one with someone who wasn't a Christian, and they got introduced to Jesus as a part of the process. So, you know, it's good. So yeah, very good.
That's awesome.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So, is there anything you want to talk about today?
What about you, Peter?
I was wondering if you could shed some light on the subject of time and the timeline. For some reason, the Lord's just really been highlighting that to us recently in different ways. Prophetically, we've gotten some friends and words personally about time and, you know, like redeeming the time, and I'm looking at that in a whole new light now with all of this stuff we're learning. And I know in some of your diagrams, Mike, you have that one diagram where you show the menorah on the side, you know, kind of on the side, and the line that goes over, and the, all of the different candlesticks are like the spaces are the kingdoms and where the courts are located and all of that. But you call that center one the timeline. And I know you have like the fiery sword is there on that as well. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
I think I was asked something similar this week as well in one of the other sessions. I think there's various ways of thinking about time. I mean, time is obviously a very interesting subject, and thinking about going back in time or affecting time and both past, present, and future. And in a sense, heaven, the realms of heaven are not in the same time dimension as this realm. But I also don't believe that they are totally absent of time, because I think the created realm is engaged as creative, and it's engaged with creative light, which operates faster than created light, because God is light. So the ultimate, if you could go fast enough, which means you could find God. because he's light, and whatever the speed that he is at, if you match that speed, you'd find God. Now that means that our time that's operating here is slowing down. It has slowed down, so time is different, and how you can get, potentially 13 billion years matched into, 6 days of creation is an interesting conundrum, but not if the speed of light has changed, because, the function of matter and space, E equals mc squared, is a function of time and matter and energy, and they're all affected. So matter, for instance, you can change it, but you can never destroy it. It just changes into another thing. You burn a piece of paper, and you might think that piece of paper disappears, but actually the atoms and molecules of that paper go into the air, and they become part of the atmosphere, and they never disappear. They're always there. And technically, if you could creatively call those atoms back together, you could form the same piece of paper. And so there are things like that where healing takes place in result of people's hair growing back. Well, because, your hair might disappear down the plug hole when you have a shower, but actually it doesn't ever not exist. It may exist in a slightly different form as it's broken down, but actually it still exists. And so there's a lot of things there where you can call things creatively back into existence. And I think looking at time, energy, matter, time, they are together in a function. And so when one is changed, it affects the others. So when it comes to time itself, I have engaged the timeline a number of times where God has taken me back in time and showed me something. And it was like I was there to see it. Right back to seeing creation birthed, and I've seen several other things from a perspective of being taken back to see it. Jesus took me back to show me miracles, and I saw him doing them, sort of thing. That's part of it. I've also seen that the timeline is connected to the heights where wisdom is, where it talks about the way. And I believe that way is talking about the way of life, which is actually past, present, and future. And there are pathways that meet there, And so that there's an interesting connection to all that. Now, can we go back in time and change something? Well, if you did, the question is, would you remember it? Because it will have never have happened. And those are some of the conundrums with time, because if you went back and changed it, then it would have never have happened. Therefore, you couldn't have a memory of it. So you would never know in reality. So I think those sorts of things are interesting sort of philosophical questions, which, have interesting things. I know people who have talked about being sent back on assignment in time. Gary Beaton, I think, is one of them. He's definitely talked about that. And going back to find out what happened to make sure that, I think what he did there was probably not to change it, but to make sure the what happened had no ongoing influence or to affect what went on, because having known what went on, he could then make declarations and do things to make sure that those things didn't have an ongoing effect. Now, the sort of question again comes up, how does that actually then outwork in this time? Because if he never went back, then it wouldn't have been affected. So the future was only there because he had already gone back and had already affected it. So it's, again, those are really interesting issues. If he had not have been sent back, would things be different now? Well, yeah, because he was sent back to have an effect, which we are now already experiencing, rather than we're here, he's done something, and then actually that only changes from now on. No, it actually must change from when he went back and did it. Unless he went back and got information, came back into this time to make sure from this point on that information was changing the future. So depending on how it was worked, you know, it is an interesting thing. And, you know, I've gone being taken back to see things so that I will have a deeper understanding and revelation of things, which then affects how then I do things now in the present. Also, you can think of we have all had experiences in our past which still affect us in the present, both positive and negative. By going back, let's say, you know, in ministry, say with like lie busting, one of the things that's done in lie busting is to go and identify, is a person stuck at a particular age through trauma or through something that's happened to them that actually affects their life today, because they get their, I don't know, angry 12-year-old Fred gets triggered by emotional things now that causes him to explode in anger because he's coming out of that immature era in his life. So when you go and you identify 8-year-old, 12-year-old Fred or whatever it might be, and you minister to 12-year-old Fred and he becomes reintegrated with adult Fred, so he is no longer operating out of what happened when he was 12 years old, then you've affected the present by dealing with the past. So that is an effect of dealing with something that happened in time, something generational, which had a generational effect and is still operating in our generations. And we go back and we deal with that generational issue. Again, you are affecting the present and therefore the future by dealing with the past. So that is, in a sense, removing what's happened in the past in time to change here and now. The other side of it is, can you go into the future and see the future, and that future then cause you to change what you do now to line up with that future? Well, I know Ian's basically said that he's been to 2057 and had a look. Also, the fact of every prophetic word that we get, which comes out of the realm of heaven, is coming out of before it's happened here. So that, in a sense, is a time function, in that the truth or the revelation of something for the future is brought into the present. Now, scientifically, that happens because the realm of the quantum realm or the spiritual realm is at a faster speed of light than this realm. Therefore, anything that's going on there will be before this realm, and so can be brought into this realm, which is coming out of the future. And a prophecy must come out of the future, because it's saying something that's not yet happened. So that must be a function of engaging in something on in time, which is before this time. So there's lots of things around it. I personally, I'm not drawn to go to look at the future myself. Not to say that I wouldn't be in at some time, maybe if I felt that way. I've already seen some of the future in terms of the prophetic timeline and the prophetic things that we're preparing for now. That is from the future, which is okay, Jesus is going to come back on the last day, and therefore we need to be ready for that. So that is the future affecting the present, in that we are wanting to be ready for that event. So both those things work together, but we must live in the present with an expectation of the future and not being hindered by our past. So the whole of time, and whether, you know, some of the pathways that meet on the heights with wisdom are connected with past, present, and future, or connected to ancient paths. I think the more time we spend there, the more we'll get engagement into that. And, you know, if you're going to go back into Satan's trophy room under the earth and get back what's been stolen and robbed, and some of that may be generational inheritance, which will be released into this generation. Again, that's releasing things that have been locked up in the past to manifest in the present. And when they manifest in the present, they will undoubtedly change the future, because we'll be operating differently as a result of it. And therefore, everything changes that way. You know, some of these things are very... the more you think about them, the more conundrums they potentially throw up. But I feel that if people are mandated and called to do it, you know, trans relocation may not just be in the present time, but maybe within time. And so we may well be trans relocated from, let's say, people now in this realm who are unable to engage with God in a different dimension, may be used by God to go back and change the past or affect the past, because we're now in a way that we can do that. Whereas maybe those people who lived in the past weren't able to engage at that level of revelation. So God is using people in the present to go back and administer things, because now there's fresh revelation about how to do it. You know, that's an interesting sort of thing. And I think maybe that's the sort of things that Gary Beaton and others are doing. You know, that would have always been in the purpose of God for that to take place. And therefore, God is, in a sense, you know, I think God, who is living within the realm of the kingdom and manifesting himself in all the places we can go to, is within a time frame. So but God infinite is outside of time altogether. So everything, you know, I think time as a function is here to limit Satan and sin, because it is only limited to time. And once time is finished, then there can be none of that outside of that time. It's wrapped up and encompassed, and in a sense will end up, you know, in the lake of fire, I guess, or wherever that represents in terms of being finally finished. And so we will not be affected by that, other than our future is somewhat determined by what we do in the present, like rewards. You know, if we're rewarded in the age to come by rulership in certain things by what we do in this time, then that still has an effect in the age to come. We just won't be affected perhaps negatively by it, because we, you know, how much we will retain. I don't want any memory of sin in the age to come. And if that's a function of time, then I would have no recollection of it. It would be completely dealt with and removed on the last day when everything gets consummated. So, you know, it's interesting. So I would say some people probably are mandated to go and seek the strategy for that mandate and what they need to do, as opposed to time. But all of us are affected by it in some way or another, and I think all of us should have rulership in the present that overcomes anything that's been a negative thing in the past. And so we have authority over what's happened in the past. Whether we actually physically go there or spiritually go there on the timeline to deal with it, and whether that's actually what we're doing by engaging in past generations and standing identificationally in the court system, is that a function of actually we are connected to what's happened there? I'm not totally sure, but main thing is that we get the end result is that we get what we should be doing in the present and then move into the future that we can see on our scroll and is part of our destiny. So if everything has been written according to Psalm 139 before it was ever fulfilled, then there is a record of it. And we can engage that record, so we should be able then to move towards what our future is, because then our desires of our heart will begin to draw us towards what our future is. So I don't know if that helps. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a pretty interesting question.
Yeah, no, that's good. That helps a lot. I was specifically wondering about, like, if you see a prophetic word or get a prophetic word about time, like, beginning to go backwards, or like even the one that you saw at the beginning of the year where you saw the benches of three and the world was spinning one way and then it slowed down and started spinning the other way. It's like, what was that? Is time reversing or being redeemed, or what would that mean?
Interesting question. I mean, redeeming something is obviously buying it back from something it's been sold into. So slavery, someone's been bought, sold into slavery, it's redeemed. So from our own perspective, can we get back time that we've wasted or lost? Well, not in the fact that you can go back and do it all over again, but you can obviously redeem by repenting and renouncing of doing that and being forgiven from doing that. Even in the sense of when I've gone to the judgment seat and had my scroll from the things I've done as a Christian expunged from that scroll, well, that effectively is wiping out the past. Actually, the blood of Jesus that covers all our sin must be affecting the past. So, because it is forgiven and cleansed, so we did it in the past, but we can be forgiven in the present. So that has redeemed that experience. And again, redeeming something would be making use of it. So in a sense, we can use our past experiences and the testimony that we've gained from going through those experiences to help other people. So using our past experiences to help people in the present and the future. So that's a way of potentially redeeming what's happened in the past and making it of use in the present. It's whether any of those things are actually a function of time in itself, or whether they're just us being able to deal with the past, and so it stops affecting the present. I mean, that's an interesting thing, I think, to think about. Prophetically, seeing a prophetic word, it definitely causes you to be drawn towards the outworking of it, because it changed what I started to do, and it changed my thinking about being more strategic about what I was doing, because I saw this and it affected me in that way. So that, you know, in a sense was seeing something that God desired me to be involved in and seeing it as a prophetic picture of what was going to take place has caused me to align myself now in the present to ensure that that does outwork, or my part of it, as much as I can do, is outworked. So that is certainly... prophecy having a powerful effect on the present. And if I didn't do that in the present, would it happen in the future? Well, my part of it certainly wouldn't be able to happen if I didn't do it. And so, you know, it's important that we do listen to prophetic revelation, and it does cause us to change the desires of our heart and realign ourselves with what God is saying and wanting. Because he's revealing his heart, So yeah, I'm not sure that I sort of understand it any more than that at the present. But I'm sure God will give revelation if I need to be involved in anything. I don't feel personally drawn to going and seeing the future, or deliberately wanting to go, because I don't feel it's part of my mandate right now, or something that God's called me to do. But that's not to say that God can't one day just take me and show me something, and that will then inspire me to actively pursue it myself. Now, I only want to pursue things myself the things that God has actually shown me and revealed to me, because then I'm making sure that I'm aligning myself with him rather than trying to pursue things for the sake that I can. You know, I can no doubt go on the timeline because I've been there. I don't want to do anything other than what I see the Father doing. And so in that sense, I have no desire independently to say, oh yeah, great, I'm going to explore time right now. Other people, it may be totally different because they may have that as part of their scroll at the moment and a season that they may be in, and they have legitimately every right to go and pursue it, which is why we need to make sure that we're all aligned with the things that God is wanting us to do at any particular season. You know, and in that sense, you know, I love science fiction and I love those sorts of things. You know, I've read Time Cop and books like that because I've been fascinated by, you know, prophecy and how things can do that. So, you know, if I was to let my imagination go, in a sense, you know, I could easily create a desire an interest into those things. But actually, that might be something I was creating rather than something that God was wanting of me now. So I'm certainly not feeling drawn towards exploring time at the moment. But who knows? You know, it may be something that becomes a desire in the future. So, yeah.
Mike, you mentioned we're talking about Satan's trophy room. Can you expand on that a little bit? I know I've heard Ian teach on it, but is that something that you need a mandate from God to do, or how do you go to the courtroom first, or how does that work? I mean, I haven't done that, so I'm just kind of curious about it.
Yeah. Well, my experience was I was mandated, and I was given. I had an encounter in worship where I was surrounded by fire and flames, and I wasn't being burnt by it, but I was aware that I was in a very fiery environment, and I'd stepped into something spiritually, which was quite intense, and then wisdom came. If I can recall what happened, I think wisdom took me to the heights and gave me a staff with a headpiece on it, a golden sort of elaborately decorated headpiece on a staff, and then she took me to a door, which was the door to under the earth, and as I opened the door, all I could see was fire. But I wasn't afraid to go through it. So I walked through it. And when I walked through it, I then came to a door, a big door, with a large demonic-looking creature that looked a little bit like the Balrog, which was in Lord of the Rings in the first film. And when I went to this door, I must admit, I did feel quite inspired to be like Gandalf, who slammed the staff into the ground and said, you know, rather than you shall not pass, it was like you shall open. And so I did it. I actually slammed this staff into the ground and declared the door open, and this thing just moved out of the way, and I was able to go into it. And actually, it was a very, very sobering, emotional thing to see the destinies of people that were Satan's trophies that were hung on his wall in this place, and those that were not yet saved, those were mantles there which he had taken from people or they'd given to him because of their sin, and there were a lot of ministry mantles there which he had claimed because people had fallen. Which was very sad. It was a really quite a sad thing to start with. And then I was taken and I went to see an area which was generational inheritance. And I felt quite stirred by thinking that I am first generation, in a sense. On my father's side, I'm first generation Christian. My mum is, she's second or third generation Christian. And but on my father's side, it was almost like I have no inheritance. Nothing positive was ever given to me. And I was sort of given the revelation to look at this area of inheritance and see that what would it have been if I was fifth generation, you know, someone like Bill Johnson who says, you know, they're fifth generation ministers, you know, what have they received as a heritage and an inheritance that has enabled them to fulfill their function much better because they have stuff passed on to them positively. And it was almost like I saw that there's so many generational things, family generational things that should have been positively given, but the enemy has stolen. And there are obviously reasons why that, but I felt that I'd been given a mandate to go there because in the future I would be able to help people to get back their inheritance. And to have, in this last generation, if you think of it coming up to this last generation, whether there's a generation to come, you know, we're in this time where, you know, we're approaching things, then it would make sense to have all that the enemy has stolen generationally and inheritance-wise released to a last generation who are going to then explode with a multiplication, and that can supernaturally take place, that we could be imparted and invested with something of authority that has been robbed over the generations, but God is going to release in this last generation. That really excited me because I thought, hey, we can see an amazing explosion of authority and power because all the generations are going to be rolled up into this last one generation released. And I feel some of that is what the Joshua generation is about. It's receiving an inheritance, yes, but it is being able to release others to get the fullness of their inheritance in the land. And I think some of that inheritance will be enabling them to receive all the generational things which have been rolled up and ready to be delivered now. And for those who've been blessed by generational inheritance, that's great and awesome. That just when I went into that room, I was just initially overwhelmed by just the amount that the enemy has as trophies and that we need back, you know, and we need to see people, obviously, engage when they become saved, they become off Satan's trophy wall and they become part of the robe, the train of the temple, of Christ's robe in the temple. When I went into heaven, the very one of the few first encounters, I was in a chariot and I was with Jesus and he had this amazing train of these robes which was going out beyond, and every sort of second there was a flash of light and it looked like this was made up of like diamonds or jewels. And, you know, I sort of said to him, what are those flashes of light? And he said, well, that's a trophy that's come home. You know, that is salvation. Someone has become part of this train. And it was just like, wow, because there's a lot of them, you know. You know, estimates anywhere between, you know, 150,000, 200,000 people a day who become born again. So there's a lot of flashes going on. And a lot of Satan's trophy room is being robbed. You know, we're getting it back. But there's an awful lot more still there, you know, and there's other things which... Now, does everyone have a mantle or a mandate? I don't know. I was given a mandate, but I'm usually given a mandate to help other people do it. So, you know, I know that you need to be able to access that on the heights, and there's a door there that will lead there. I've not taken anyone there yet.
You haven't done that yet?
No, I've not taken anyone there yet. Not felt authorized to do that yet, but I'm sure I will. I took some people yesterday to a place I've not taken anyone else before either, because I felt authorized to do it, having been there myself in the morning. Sometimes it's just, you know, I go with the flow of things that God is leading me to do. But I will do. I mean, it's an area that, but you need to have a level of authority to be able to go there. You know, and I went there to observe and to it was a reconnaissance mission to give me an understanding of what was going on there and what I then needed to go back and seek wisdom about the strategy of how. Because it's okay knowing, yes, there are all these generational things. Yeah, I can see a real clear thing of, yeah, everyone who gets saved, their trophy comes out of that and they become part of God's train, and that's shown off there in heaven, which was awesome. Mantles, which have been given up because of sin and have not been repented of and therefore are still there. We may need some understanding of how. And so when I feel the time's right, I will go to wisdom. And, you know, I very much operate on the desires of my heart take me towards. And so very often I get encounters which are seemingly random, but they're not. They're things which then they do lead me, and eventually they open up something. And so yesterday morning I felt drawn to go back to a place that I'd been to several times before, a pool in the Garden of God that has within it a chest that has some of the thoughts of God about us. And so I went back there and I took a thought, and that thought became a mandate, and I took that mandate to the court and I got that mandate authorized, and then I released angels and I got a strategy for it. And then in the afternoon, in one of the hangouts, I then released that strategy and I took some people back there themselves, and some of the things got outworked. And hearing some of their testimony, because I didn't tell them what I was doing, I just took them there, and some of the testimonies lined up with the strategy and the mandate I was given and shown. So I thought, hey, that's really cool. In a whole day, I've seen the whole process at work and see fruit from it. So that was really cool. I really liked that. And so when I get things like that, then I pursue them until I get the mandate and the strategy of knowing what to do, and then I go and do it. I've not felt to go back yet about the trophy room, but I will. I mean, it's one of those things that I've had the experience because it's now part of my desires, and when the right time is, then I will either go back there or I'll go to seek wisdom about what I need to do, and a strategy for the different things that are there, and what it will take to get other people to go there to be able to do that for themselves, you know, and I will go back and do that for myself first. You know, I sort of knew enough about it, and it has opened up some thoughts that God revealed to me about my generations, you know, which have given me enough encouragement to think, yeah, there's some stuff there. Because God showed me some things about my generation that I didn't know. You know, and it was like he showed me some positive things about Christian heritage within my generations. You know, because I went back in one generational line on my mother's father's side back to sort of like 17-something and back into France and in a France royal court and different things there. And I did that naturally by tracing back the genealogy and got back to, you know, France pre-French Revolution. But God also did some things and showed me some genealogy of godly people within my generation, which was an encouragement because I didn't know them. But he showed me things, which was good, you know. I think is a definite future thing that I'll probably get some access to do.
Do you think that that's part of the reason maybe people are stuck, or, you know, I work with some people that they just don't seem to get the full desire, you know, it's very limited as far as how far they go spiritually, and they seem to get it, and then they just go back, you know, to their old ways so much. It's like, you know, why aren't you, you know, what's the hang up here? What do they not get? They're not getting or grabbing a hold of the real truth, or if they do, it's temporary.
I would say that in some of those type of experiences, a lot of that is because we have not brought people into a fullness of what salvation is. I think we've preached a gospel which is easy and offers people a fire insurance to get into heaven without becoming a disciple. And I think so much, I'm not saying that everything is manipulative, but I think a lot of altar call type things have some sort of element of emotional thing with it, which are not necessary that everyone was ever born again who went and just walked out or prayed a prayer without choosing to follow Jesus and make him become a disciple. Because Jesus didn't say you can receive salvation in any way. He didn't say pray a prayer like this. He said, you know, leave everything behind and come and follow me. And without that level of, yeah, I'm going to follow Jesus no matter what, either there's a whole lot of premature births in which people are really prematurely birthed and not making that real decision to follow Jesus, but have sort of brought into, I don't know, something which is not the fullness of it. Anyone who is totally born again of the Spirit of God should have a desire to pursue him. Now then, obviously it's up to the church to disciple people in making sure that they deal with the weeds and the seeds and the stones in the heart. Because if you don't deal with the hard areas of the heart, you don't get rid of the memories, and you don't get transformed in that in area, then that can cause you to look to your old ways of doing stuff. I think a revelation of baptism and what it means to be dead and crucified with Christ, you know, have we truly presented the truth of the Christian faith to people? And if we haven't, then we're have to be accountable for the way in which we presented the gospel and presented the Christian life. So for us here, we're producing this equipping track, and it's going to be experiential. So when we see people saved, we're going to introduce them into an encounter with God, in which they drink the living water, in which they open up their life and allow the presence of God to come in, actually as an encounter, rather than pray this prayer and hopefully you're all right now. No, we're going to do it differently. When we have our next baptism, we are going to do it totally differently, in which we're going to have it as a personal encounter with, like, Jesus's baptism and the heaven open and God speaking down and words of affirmation. And we're going to actually do it totally differently. And we're going to look for encounters that help everybody to engage with the reality of the truth rather than intellectually having intellectual knowledge. And I would say for the last, I don't know how many hundreds of years, we have been presenting people with intellectual knowledge rather than experiential encounter. And, you know, those that are genuinely birthed from a, what must I do to be saved? I am on my face before you, and I desperately want you, and I'm going to follow you the rest of my life, don't tend to go back. Those that we've said, anyone want to become a Christian, put their hands up, just repeat after me this prayer, I think a lot of them aren't genuinely meeting with God. And therefore, they go back because they never, you know, when you look at the parable of the sower, it talks about those who become unfruitful, so they were fruitful. It also talks about those who had no root in themselves. So does those that did not receive the seed, that their hearts were hard, well, we can say that they were never impacted by the kingdom or born again. There were those that had the cares of this world, the weeds and the thorns, that says, oh, when trouble came as a result of living out the truth, they went back. You had those who had stones in their hearts that the roots never went down. Were any of those first three actually really born again? Or does the seed have to go into good ground before it really produces a harvest? Can you have the seed going in and then produce good ground? Those are interesting thoughts. And I think God is leading us to a more experiential encounter with God where people genuinely know that they have been born again and they genuinely know God is now living in them, and then they can be guided and directed by the Holy Spirit to hear God's voice and to follow him as a sheep. If we have not helped people hear his voice, how will they follow him? Because Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice and they follow me. So if people can't hear God's voice, either we've not helped them and equipped them, or they were never born again in the first place. And I think we have to genuinely look at a lot of what we do and how we've done it. You know, because I mean, I don't know about this, but I read something about a group in the States that were producing some sort of baptism, public baptism pack to say this is how you do it, and they would have plants in the crowd and in the audience, and they would get people rushing up to the front to encourage other people to rush up to the front. And it just sounded like manipulation rather than genuine people. And it's like, well, why? Why would you want to do that? You know, I'm not saying there's not genuinely the Holy Spirit moves people and people respond. I mean, I went to I went to Pensacola and I went to the Brownsville, and I experienced what it was to be under conviction of the Holy Spirit. So I can see when they started singing, you know, run to the mercy seat, I wanted to run to the mercy seat, and I was already saved. And I just wanted to run up there and just encounter God, because I was under conviction, because the fire of God was there. And I'm genuine. That was genuine. I have no doubt that that was genuine. There was no manipulation that I would see. But there are other things that I have doubts about. And therefore, you know, I want to see the genuine. And I would rather give people the option, like Jesus did and said, weigh this up. Don't walk this way if you're going to turn and look backwards. So make a decision that's going to be a decision to be a disciple of Jesus, weigh the cost, and decide whether you're willing to pay the cost. That's how Jesus did it, and he had 12 people with him, and then 120 people with him that changed the world, because they were willing to be martyred. They were willing to, and most of them were, because they were willing to pay the cost of being a disciple, and Jesus made it so clear. You know, if you're not willing to hate everybody in comparison with your love for me, then you can't be my disciple. If you're not willing to give up everything to follow me, then you can't be my disciple. How much do you hear that as a presentation of the gospel? Encouraging people, don't come and follow me unless you're willing to see whether you've got enough money to complete the building. You know, and he made it really challenging. He wasn't making it easy for people.
Yeah, I guess too. I mean, it's like, you know, once they do make a commitment, then you go through a certain process of transformation. That's it's then they're going back to their old ways, their old habits, and really not caring about the change that just happened. they're just allowing themselves to live in the old pattern again. And that's, it's a little frustrating because I know that there's, you know, and then you hear other ministries talk about, well, you got to, you're just, you step into your identity in Christ. If you're in Christ, then you're no longer, you know, your old self. So there's a conflict there of the process, and I get that. But the process seems to me like it shouldn't be going back to the same issues over and over. It should be something different that you're dealing with to go from glory to glory. Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. But my question would be, what were we giving people as their entrance into salvation?
Right.
Did they actually experience something, or were they following a formula that we gave them? And therefore, were we expecting them to do something that they had not got the power of God to do because the power of God wasn't in them? So when are people genuinely saved? When the presence of God comes to dwell in them, and if they do not sense that presence of God or know and therefore able to follow, then were they genuinely born again in the first place? And I would question some people's experience, because it wasn't an experience. They just did something. And so, you know, the issue of whether everything is all done, you know, I know it's a big issue within the body right now, and I know there's a big issue over, you know, was it all done on the cross? Absolutely, it was all done on the cross. Were we crucified with Christ on the cross? Yes. Our old nature was completely crucified with Christ on the cross. Does that mean that our soul was totally transformed? No, because the transformation is a process. Transfiguration, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, was not something that could happen in an instant. But me becoming a new creation in Christ, my spirit coming alive, God coming to live in my spirit, and therefore me being able to engage in a relationship with God as that my old nature dead, yeah, absolutely, that happened. And I think the problem lies with those people who are teaching that it all happened the instant and we just have to believe it. They do not take into account that we are spirit, soul, and body. They are teaching we are body and spirit, and the spirit and the soul are the same. And I don't believe the Bible teaches that. So I would have an issue over anybody who was saying, okay, yeah, everything's new. Because spiritually that is true, but you know, did everything become new when you got born again? Did you get every sickness and disease instantly removed? No, you could say, well, that was because it wasn't taught and I didn't have faith and I didn't believe it. Okay, I've no problem teaching the power of the cross because it's victory for us. I just believe that there's a danger in people who are told that you just have to believe, and then the issue would be how much they believe rather than what Jesus did on the cross. And they get in bondage because they can't believe enough. So they're trying and striving to believe what he's already done. Well, I think that puts people into more bondage than telling them, hey, you got some issues to sort out, but God's in you now, and he will sort them out as you surrender them to him. You know, and you can be transformed and renewed, and your soul can be restored. So a process of restoration of the soul goes on from the fact that Jesus accomplished it for us in the cross. You know, and you take those things to the extreme and you have problems, because Jesus died for all our sin, therefore why do we need to repent? He died for it anyway, so surely why would we need to confess our sin, because it's already covered on the cross? Well, clearly the New Testament tells us to confess our sin so we can be cleansed and made righteous in 1 John 1:9. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things around that. I'm totally convinced that Jesus did everything on the cross that I need. I have to apply it every day to my life. And Adam and Eve had no sin in their life. They only had their flesh to make a choice. They had free will. the flesh wasn't bad. As long as it was being led by the Spirit in relationship with God, they had no self-awareness separately from God, because they were in fellowship with him all the time. It was only when the, oh, you can do this apart from God was introduced, that they suddenly became aware of being able to do something independently of God, which when they chose to do it, caused them to go and run and hide in the bushes and cover up. So now they were responsible for covering up their own situation. Even at that point, I believe if Adam and Eve had gone back to God and said, God, we have made a terrible mistake, will you forgive us? He would have totally forgiven them and they would have been back to where they were. But I think they chose to hide. And mankind has been hiding forever in that sense, in the bushes, away from God, trying to do things in their own strength. So I want to see genuine salvation and genuine disciples, and I don't believe we will have the same issues with those who genuinely make a decision to follow Jesus to death and are willing to surrender their life to him in lordship. You know, for me, in the New Testament, there was no difference. We've separated it out. You become a Christian, then you sort of make Jesus Lord later on when you understand a little bit more, and then maybe you get baptized in the Spirit, and then you maybe get this. It's like, I want to see this coming together, you know, and seeing genuinely people whose lives are transformed and that they surrender it all. And I don't believe it should take years and years and years, because I believe some of these things like lie busting and other things are accelerated processes, that you can identify things and sort them out much, much quicker. But they're still there to be sorted. You know, the danger in telling people that you just have to believe because it's all done, although it sounds like it's bringing people into freedom, those who are struggling will be very reticent to admit that they have a problem and an issue, because they will be seen potentially as, well, you just don't believe enough. Because it's all done. We can't do anything more than it's already been done. So you just have to believe, oh, well, yeah, but I'm feeling this and I'm feeling that. They will be putting on a mask and pretending. And I have seen that. I have seen people dancing and kicking their feet in the air and laughing to fit in, when in the inside they were a total mess. And I've looked spiritually and I've seen some of what they look like in the spirit realm, and they were pretending because they wanted to feel that way rather than they did. And it's sad. It's sad to behold people trying to fit in and being afraid to be honest and real and just saying, hey, I feel a total mess today. Can you help me? And yeah, of course we can help you. I'm going to wear a Sunday mask today, and when someone asks me, I'm going to say, oh, I'm fine, when I'm not. I want an environment where people can be real and honest, and then you can help them deal with their things. I don't want to create an environment where people are afraid to be real.
Well, there's also an environment here, I don't know about you, Peter, if you've run into this in the States, where there's this grace to do so that people do things, and then they decide, God's going to forgive me, so I'm just going to do it. You know, I'm already forgiven. It's just kind of, so I'm going to behave in a way that I know I shouldn't. Even though I've walked through transformation, I'm going to do it anyway. And then I'll ask for God's grace will, and, you know, I'll get forgiveness. So that's kind of going on. But part of my question that you can answer real quick, I know we're short on time, do you think that part of all of this going on is because there are things in Satan's trophy room that needs to be taken back, I guess, is my question, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are only things in Satan's trophy room that he has had legal access to put there. So anyone who is not yet obviously born again, they are his, and he can use those people. Yeah, they are pawns in his game, in a sense, and so he can use people. once their destiny is out of that trophy room and it's in brought back into the realm of heaven, then if we're engaging with God, then we can start to outwork our destiny because it's our destiny. The heritage of previous generations would help us turbocharge that, if you like, by having that released. So it can be brought into this generation and therefore can multiply the effect of what we do, perhaps. But even without that, we can still pursue our destiny because we are now got access to heaven, and heaven is accessed in us. So I don't think it's a, oh, well, if we don't get that out of there, we can make that an excuse. But God wants to release that so that it can be multiplied in this generation to enable the kingdom to be manifested in greater dimension. So, you know, I think we need to get hold of everything that belongs to us, absolutely. But not to be too caught up with it. You know, it is going to take place, and we've got to be open for when that takes place for us. But we still have a destiny, and we still have access to the mandate in heaven, and we can still do everything. It's the on-earth stuff, I think, that it will affect more than our engagement in the heaven to see it released on earth, because I think it's going to affect the maybe the outworking of the miraculous and the outworking of that heritage, perhaps. Because there have been obviously generations and generations and generations that have lived without the power of the Spirit. You know, and so we're in a generation where the power of the Spirit is being released. You know, I have not got enough information or revelation yet to put a major issue around it right now. I just know that God has shown it me, because there will be something that we will be able to help people. But it will be a help, not a, oh, this is absolutely vital, and without this you won't be able to do anything. Otherwise, people will be stuck, and we don't want people to be stuck. And it may well be that when a level of maturity kicks in, that we have embraced everything that we are called to do in our generation, that then, hey, we then get access to all the other stuff which should have been ours, and which wasn't, because we've been faithful with the little. And maybe then we'll get much released. I don't know. You know, but you know, it's something that I'm sure others are going to get some revelation on. That hopefully will maybe add to it and give us some more insight into it, perhaps. So yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. You got anything, Peter, you want to share?
Well, I had another question, but I know we're getting late. I can save it for next week. So.
All right. Okay, I've got another hangout at 2 o'clock.